Oh, they have been deemed well enough to go back to work. Now, that tells me something different than what I thought was the real focus of the problem. I don't want employers using it as a...
Okay, well, let me...
That's where I'm coming.
I'd like to look at that a little more.
Okay, Senator Starkovich wants to move to reconsider the vote by which Senate Bill 449 was taken. Is there any objection? Okay, hearing none, I'll be so ordered. Steve, do you want to come up here a second? That's right, just stay there. You can just stay there. Do you want to...
Is there anyone here, Madam Chair, from workers' comp?
Is there anyone here from the department that wants to comment on that?
449.
Well, we're reconsidering it because I don't want it to be used.
Let's get the other side of the story up here because it produces some real problems with double gates. You know, where you've got, you're seeing any labor dispute.
Well, she's got a different problem, which I think is, she's wondering if this actually extends benefits beyond the time they would normally be extended. In other words, it doesn't just... So I guess the issue, Steve, is, and Larry maybe can address it also, is reading this language. If the normal situation would be if they're medically stationary and they've been told they can go back to work, then the benefits are terminated, right?
That's correct.
Okay, so what does, in your opinion, what does this language do? If, would this reestablish their benefits if... in that situation, if the employer, or is it other types of benefits that they might be entitled to?
Larry. First, Madam Chair, Larry Young, Workers' Compensation Department. First, there's a little bit of confusion. When a physician releases the worker to return to regular work, notwithstanding whether the worker is medically stationary, time loss benefits discontinue at that point in time.
Yes.
Okay.
His claim is not determined as to extend disability until his condition is medically stationary.
Okay.
But when the worker is released to return to regular work in a normal pain processing, his benefits discontinue whether he actually returns to work or not.
Okay, so how do you read this language here, Larry? It
would read that under normal circumstances, if he was released to return to work and otherwise would... benefits would be discontinued at that time. His benefits wouldn't continue until the strike was over.
That's my problem right there. I don't think that's the focus of
I think, Madam Chair, too, if you want to focus on a possibly a light duty situation where you know the claim is still active in some respect, and the worker is released to return to a light duty job at a particular place of employment that happens to be involved in a labor dispute. I think you're talking about that situation too.
Madam Chair,
Senator McCoy,
this seems to me to mean that the person when he did return to work, he would not have lost benefits. Not that his workers' comp would be cut off.
Madam Chair.
His workers' comp would continue. I think that he would return without being demoted or without loss of other benefits that he would have normally have accrued while on the job.
Okay. Senator Starkovich, what's your...
I have to say that I misread the last part of that sentence. And when I asked Steve, currently if someone is injured, a strike takes place while they're still out, they then, the physician then approves the worker's return to work. Can the employer, under current law, require that person to cross the picket line?
Senator Starkovich, did you say if the person is hurt during the course of a labor dispute?
No, before the labor dispute.
Okay. Okay. The
injury takes place. There's a strike. The worker is declared able to return to work by the physician. Benefits normally would be cut off at that point. Now, under current law, does the employer, can the employer go to that employee and say, because you were out when the strike took place, you're required to cross the picket line. If you don't cross the picket line, you're gone.
Well, I don't think, Senator Starkovich, it would necessarily be the employer that would say that. It would be a technical reading of the law that said, technically speaking, you're released to go back to work. You haven't followed the dictates of the law. You're not following the rules. Therefore, there are grounds to cut off any future benefits, future medical payments, for example, should the injury be aggravated. I think a technical reading of the law says this. Now, this must have been a year and a half ago when this situation first arose. I had written a letter to the Workers' Compensation Department pointing out this situation to them, asking them specifically if it was the policy of the department to, in fact, require these people to return to work to cross a picket line. They said it's not the official policy of the department to require strike breaking, if you will. Nevertheless, a technical reading of the law says this is exactly the problem that we're faced with.
Okay. I think, Madam Chair, that we can solve that problem with language that is different than the words without loss of any benefits provided by this chapter.
Yeah, I was reading this case one more time. I think in this instance, the person was suing for loss of temporary total disability and for vocational services. I think what we're intending is that we don't want them to use the system to say, okay, you're ready to go back to work and cut off their benefits to coerce them into being strike breakers. I don't think anybody wants to extend benefits just by virtue there happens to be a labor dispute going on.
Exactly.
Madam Chair, if I just might interject, I don't think also that the intent of this bill, if time loss happened to have been payable at some point, I don't think the intent of the bill is to simply continue time loss payments because there's a labor dispute in progress. That's
right.
Not
we
the
don't
intent.
Want to do that.
We're looking down the road, as I say, in the case of an aggravation where medical doctor bills, other aspects become payable once again if the injury is aggravated or if there is need for physical or vocational rehab somewhere down the line.
What I would suggest,
I support that, but that's not what's going before us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, what I would suggest, because I don't want to take any more time up on this today, I would ask Steve to get together with Cheyenne and to, or if the division or the department wants to suggest some language, to accomplish, to narrow the focus of this and to accomplish what we're trying to do. And if you could put that back up as soon as we can.
Madam Chair, one thing that I want to, when they get together, I want to speak to one other issue here, is that remember, along with union contracts, you've got union contracts and non-union contracts operating on the same premise, to where a labor dispute covers both of them, and they have two separate gates to go through. And they, want to make sure we don't, when you refer to a labor dispute, you're referring to that whole class of workers that work there, union and non-union. And, so you want to keep that in mind as you draft any kind of legislation.
Well, I think what we're trying to deal with, the same thing we did in 56, where you've got a union member.
I mean,
you don't have any problem with that, do you?
No, I don't have any problem with that, but that isn't what it is.
Well, that's what we're going to try to refine the language. Okay, thank you.
Okay,
2132. I apologize to the committee. I thought that one was unshaped to go out. Okay, 2132.
Yeah, Madam Chair and members of the committee, we really appreciate the opportunity to appear before you today with these amendments. I must confess we've been a little bit asleep at the switch because we neglected to remember that the pro tem judges or pro tem referees.
I was just looking for your copies of your amendments. Cheyenne, do we have copies of her amendments?
Right here.
I have some more here.
Do you have some extra copies?
These,
yeah.
It's right here.
Are these there?
No, that's the worker conflict. Well, we're getting those copies distributed to us. That's all right. She can. Did you get it from her?
I have about five.
The bill, the underlying bill, is simply a housekeeping bill from the department, which deals with cleaning up some language. It's a relatively innocuous bill, so it. Well, we're going to focus, and we had a hearing on it. It deals with what we're looking now is some amendments that are being proposed to deal with the pro tem referee situation.
The present law put a sunset clause on the pro tem referees for July 1 of 1985, and this amendment would simply remove that sunset clause on it, use the same language otherwise it's presently in the law, only remove the sunset clause. We have checked it with everybody that we thought had any interest in it, including the department, the claimants bar, defense bar, house labor committee, management, and labor, and nobody has any objection to the removal of the sunset. It's been a worthwhile program for the board. It allows us some flexibility, which we otherwise wouldn't have. I can go over with you some of the points of the pro tem program if you would like to have me take the time to do that.
I'd just like to ask one question. Why was the sunset placed there?
The program was originally initiated, Madam Chairman and Senator McCoy, in 1981, and because it hadn't had enough time to really experience what the results were going to be in 83, why a sunset clause was then put on it to again look at it. We think it has worked out well. The people in the field, all of whom I've checked with, think it has worked out well. It is for the surges that we have, the work surges up and down, it's nice to be able to call back, for instance, retired referees to come in and help out. It's also cost effective from the standpoint of those people who are retired. Of course, we're not paying PERS and everything else for them. We have presently four who are working on a pro tem basis, one of them being the person in the board who always did all the safety hearings. He's very good at safety hearings. When he retired the first of the year, all parties involved asked that he be come back as a pro tem for the purpose of hearing safety cases. So we're using him on that basis. We have a retired circuit court judge at LeGrand, Warner Wasley, who hears cases over there, and that does away with the necessity of sending somebody over there paying travel time and expense time and so forth for him to stay. We have a person in Portland who is also a pro tem circuit court judge who works as a pro tem for the board. And the fourth person who works as a pro tem now is Keith Wilson, the former chairman of the board.
Is the language that's being proposed, the underlying language, the same language? In other words, they can work for a year?
Yes, same language. I have copies also, Madam Chair, of the present law, if you'd just like to look at it. If you'd like to check the language, we moved the thing into the referee section simply because it appeared more appropriate there than stuck in as just a sunset thing. I would ask also if the committee would consider, and I didn't think of it at the time of preparing the amendment, but if the committee would consider the emergency clause on it for the reason that we do sunset July 1 of 85. The department said they have no objection to the emergency clause on the balance of the bill, which is the housekeeping bill of the department.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hanser.
I will move the amendments conceptually, assuming that they will go to Legislative Council, proposed amendments to House Bill 2132 along with the emergency clause.
Okay. Senator Hanby has moved the proposed amendments. I just had another question. These people, that's fairly, I mean, for pro tem, that's a pretty long appointment, 1 year. Do they take the place of a regular staffing? Or?
No, they only work as assigned. Doug Daughtry, who's a presiding referee, is here, and maybe Doug would like to address that question.
you?
Morning.
Morning. My name is Doug Daughtry, the presiding referee. We use the pro tems, as the chairman indicated, to handle our work surges that come frequently. And also, we're getting more cases that last 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 days, as opposed to the average of about 2 hours. When we have these long cases, it does have the potential to cut into our production. And we use the pro tems to take care of those cases so regular referees can continue to produce.
So they're more or less on call for a year. It's not that they would be working full-time during that year. Is that it?
That's correct.
They're kind of on an on-call status.
Yes.
Is that it? Okay. Any other questions? Okay. It sounds like a very good concept. I'm not very familiar with how it works in practice, but I know that in the judicial system, pro tems can play a very important role. Okay. Is there any objections, Senator Hanby's motion for amendment? Okay. That'll be so ordered. And we'll have that sent down to Legislative Council then to have the bill draft. Yeah, we're getting, it's getting to be about this time. Do you want to move the bill and then we'll
the
subject
forget
to
me. Yes.
Senator Hanby moves House Bill 2132 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Will the clerk call the roll?
Senator Hanby?
Aye.
Senator Howe?
Aye.
Senator Bernstein?
Aye.
Senator McCoy?
Aye.
Senator Otto?
Aye.
Senator Starkovich?
Aye.
Senator Hendrickson?
Aye. So that'll be so ordered, and then it'll be subject to the same conditions. We'll have Cheyenne take a look at it after it comes back from Legislative Council. We are nearing the time for adjournment. We've gotten a lot done today. I'm a little reluctant to take up these other two bills because they're going to take more than 3 minutes, I think, to analyze them.
And I carry an early resolution.
Okay, so we'll be in adjournment. Thank you very much.
I think you